Hello, hello there, beautiful ones. Welcome to Literary Snapshots. We are getting so close to the end of Jane Eyre now. And one of the things I always look forward to when I finish a classic book is, of course, exploring some of the film versions of it. So I thought I would start this episode by sharing my thoughts about a few of the most popular ones with you. First is the 1983 BBC miniseries that has Timothy Dalton playing Mr. Rochester. This one is rated PG and it has 11 short episodes. Now, it's definitely a little bit dated, but it is generally thought of as the version that sticks closest to the book, which is why it's still so popular. And right now it is free with Amazon Prime, at least as of this recording. I have seen this one, but it's been years and years. As far as I remember and have heard from others, it doesn't really contain any unexpected, questionable content, just the novel's general creepiness, of course. Next is the newest BBC miniseries. This one is from 2006. It has 4 episodes and is also rated PG, and it's also free with Amazon Prime right now. Now, this one is beautifully done. I think just the setting, the cinematography is stunning, but heads up, unfortunately, there is a very quick and completely out of the blue sex scene towards the end of the 3rd episode, as well as a couple of very suggestive scenes in the 4th one, and scenes that I feel should not be rated TVPG. And the last thing I want is for you to be caught off guard by that. If you were, say, watching with your teens or something, hashtag ask me how I know. So my recommendation would be to keep this one for the adults or just to preview so you know when to fast forward. And then finally is the movie version from 2011. I think of this one as the Judi Dench version because she plays Mrs. Fairfax in this one. Now, weirdly on Amazon, it incorrectly lists this one as being made in 1996. So just keep that in mind if you're trying to find it. This film is rated PG-13, mainly for the scenes in which Jane is mistreated when she's a child. And you can look this one up on commonsensemedia.org if you want to check out more specifics about why it has that rating. This is the version that we're going to be watching together on our Introverted Moms movie night coming up soon on April 24th. Right now, Steve and I are still figuring out the tech side of how that's going to work, so just keep an eye out for that info coming soon. I hope that helps you figure out what versions you might like to check out after you finish the book. And now let's move on to chat about chapters 31 through 36. First, let's start with a synopsis of these chapters. Jane begins to settle into her new life as teacher of the village girls' school. And on the surface, she seems happy, but she has never forgotten Mr. Rochester or her grief. Meanwhile, St. John Rivers is in love with the daughter of the wealthiest man in the village, Rosamond Oliver. Yet he will not allow himself to marry her because that would interfere with what he believes is God's will for his life, to go as a missionary to India. Later, we get a huge surprise when we discover that Jane has inherited a fortune from her Uncle John, who passed away and made her his sole heir. And she is now a rich, independent woman. But we get an even bigger surprise when we find out that her Uncle John is also St. John, Diana, and Mary's Uncle John. Yes, they are real life cousins, and Jane finally has the family that she has dreamt of having for so long. She splits the money equally with them, quits the school, and decides to return to Morehouse, bringing Diana and Mary back from their positions as governesses. Now, St. John later proposes marriage to Jane, wanting her to come with him and be his missionary wife in India. And she knows he doesn't love her, but she agrees to go as his sister instead of his wife. He says this will definitely not do and puts all kinds of creepy pressure on her to accept. Why can't Jane just get like a decent marriage proposal one time? She almost does. Except until she hears a voice calling her name across the moors, and it is the pain-stricken voice of Mr. Rochester. The next day, she returns to Thornfield only to discover an empty, blackened, burned-down ruin. She finds out that back at harvest time, Bertha, Mr. Rochester's wife, set fire to Jane's old bed. And that fire spread to the entire house. Bertha then jumped to her death before Mr. Rochester could reach her on the roof. And in the process of saving everyone else, he lost his vision as well as a hand. Jane discovers that he now lives at Ferndean, a smaller home that he owned nearby. And when chapter 36 ends, she is on her way there. Okay, friends, now for a few highlighted scenes that just jumped out at me because of how they connect with maybe our own roles and situations as introverted moms. The first is in chapter 32 when we see Jane adjusting to her life at the village school. I loved how this showed that happiness and contentment return to her through service to others and through belonging to a community. Here is what she says.
I felt I became a favorite in the neighborhood. Whenever I went out, I heard on all sides cordial salutations and was welcomed with friendly smiles. To live amidst general regard, though it be but the regard of working people, is like sitting in sunshine, calm and sweet. Serene inward feelings bud and bloom under the ray. At this period of my life, my heart far oftener swelled with thankfulness than sank with dejection.
Jane's thoughts here also brought to mind for me the research on happiness that has shown that happiness has a set point. And even when people go through some of the most traumatic experiences or losses like grief, death, and minor things like moving house, things that can impact people's happiness. After a period of like 6 months to a year, usually most people's happiness has returned to whatever their personal set point is. And perhaps that's part of what's going on here with Jane. Now let's look at something from chapter 34 that I thought was so interesting and really speaks to the different seasons of life we go through as women, as mothers in our case, and as introverts. This is taking place after Jane has found out about her fortune. She's with St. John and she explains her plan to stop teaching and return to Morehouse to bring Diana and Mary back so they can all be together. And St. John, who is a real workhorse, very serious and stern, does not approve of this plan. Here is what he says and then how she responds.
You have only toiled a few months. Would not a life devoted to the task of regenerating your race be well spent? Yes, I said, but I cannot go on forever so. I want to enjoy my own faculties as well as to cultivate those of other people.
I think Jane makes such a beautiful point about self-care here, that God gave us our abilities to develop, and we are to use those in service of others, but they're also for our own benefit, our own use, and our own joy. And I love how Jane feels the grace of that here and is not under some kind of guilty obligation the way that St. John feels as though he is.
Let's move forward now to chapter 35, which has so much going on that I found it hard to narrow down what I wanted to talk about here. This is the chapter in which Sinjin makes his marriage proposal to Jane, tries to convince her that God wants her to go with him to India as his wife. And here is the conversation they have between each other. This is Jane responding to him. "With you, I would have ventured much, because I admire, confide in, and as a sister, I love you. But I am convinced that, go when and with whom I would, I should not live long in that climate." "Ah, you are afraid of yourself," he said, curling his lip. "I am. God did not give me my life to throw away, and to do as you wish me would, I begin to think, be almost equivalent to committing suicide." Jane does go on later to say that she is willing to go if she really believes that it is God's will. She is even willing to marry Sinjin if she believes that it is God's will. But she clearly does not believe either one of those things. And what I love here is that she knows herself and her limits, and she isn't going to allow someone else, even someone that she cares about, like Sinjin, put her down, put her in that place of agreeing to something that she knows is not right for her. And I found that just really inspiring as a fellow highly sensitive introvert, like I believe Jane is. Finally, just a few pages after that is where Jane begins to hear this voice calling to her across the plane. She doesn't know where it's coming from, but she knows the voice immediately. Of course, it's Mr. Rochester. And here is what happens, because Sinjin is still with her at this point.
"I broke from Sinjin, who had followed and would have detained me. It was my time to assume ascendancy. My powers were in play and in force. I told him to forbear question or remark. I desired him to leave me. I must and would be alone. He obeyed at once. Where there is energy to command well enough, obedience never fails."
In the highlighted section of my Kindle copy here, I just wrote, "Wow," after that last line, because I think it says a lot about boundaries, about sometimes the things that we put up with as moms. But haven't you ever had one of those situations where somewhere in your depths you say no to a child, and it is coming from a place where they know that they have gone too far and it's time to stop? I feel like that is what Jane is experiencing here. And she just has the energy to break this with Sinjin at that moment, which is so interesting if you think about the entire chapter up until that point, where he has this kind of mystical power and hold over her that's growing and growing. And here, boom, she just ends it. It made me think of how sometimes, and this is so tricky to know as a mom, but sometimes we just put up with situations for far too long. I know I've seen this time and time again, where, I'll think, okay, this kid is going through a certain phase. Let me just try patience. Let me try ignoring it. And I mean, sometimes that's the right thing to do. And then other times it's like it just grows and grows and grows until finally it's like, okay, no, we're done with this. And I know there's been times when I've just wished, why didn't I do that at the very beginning? So I thought this was a fun reminder of that in this scene from Jane. And before we end our time together, I just wanted to leave you with a closing question. This one came to me from my children, actually. My daughter Trishna has been recently reading Pride and Prejudice, and one of her online mentors posed a very interesting question, which was, if you had to accept one person's marriage proposal, would you choose Mr. Collins or would you choose Wickham? And I found that just an excruciating
concept because I can't imagine being married to either one of them. So I felt like that translated very well to our situation. If you had to marry one of them, would you choose Mr. Rochester or would you choose St. John? Both of these guys have some serious issues to work through. On the one hand, just like with Mr. Collins and Wickham, you have this one who's supposedly quote unquote good, but I have such a hard time, like Jane, imagining being married to St. John. Oh my gosh, no. And then marrying Mr. Collins just is just a painful thought to even consider. So maybe we can talk about that in the forum and we can make a little poll or something and see who gets the most votes. Next time we will be chatting about the final two chapters. So I look forward to that. And until then, I hope this has been fun and helpful to listen to, and take good care, friends. Talk to you soon.